Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hi, I'm Nancy Cartwright. You may know me better as the voice of Bart Simpson.
On Simpsons Declassified, we're diving into the mysteries that keep the Simpsons forever young. Have you ever wondered how the Simpsons regularly predicts future events? Who better to ask than the show's creators, performers, and writers? The celebrity guests. Be sure to follow and listen to Simpsons Declassified wherever you get your podcasts.
Here we go, the Rob Brown Show back on your radio. It's Rob and Lonzo. Yo.
Nailed it. Absolutely stuck the landing on that one. French judge gives it a 9. Great to have you back. Oh, you know, just dramatically, you know what? No, I'm not. I was going to say dramatically overreacting to the college football weekend. I don't think we are. It is, well, actually, Monday. Here on the Rob Brown Show. It's where we react to everyone else's overreactions. But I have to say, respectfully, I don't think anybody's overreacting to Clemson or South Carolina this morning. I think they're just regular reacting. Just regular reacting at this point. It's not good. I had one more thought. And I saved this one because I wanted to break down both South Carolina and Clemson individually before I make a joint statement about these two teams. Something is happening in college football. I've been saying for a while now, I think we are in the era of the football dude coach. Here's what I mean by that. I had a take, thought, opinion, whatever you want to call it, about Nick Saban that I carried for a very long time. And there were a lot of folks who pushed back on it. I still don't think I was wrong. Nick Saban was an aura guy. He wasn't a great coach. When I say coach, I am talking about X's and O's. I am talking about halftime tinkering. I am talking about making adaptations to the game during the game. Nick Saban was a guy who for many years beat you in February. He beat you in the spring. He beat you in the lead up to the game. He beat you by A, making sure his roster was filled with better players. Now, how he did that, up for a debate. Did he do it with $500 handshakes? Did he do it because he was successful and the rich get richer? Did he do it with some combination of both, which I think is true? It doesn't matter how he did it. It was done. I pointed out that there were a lot of games where Nick Saban's team lost because I thought the guy across from him maybe didn't have better players, Syracuse. I think the guy across from him just outcoached him. And I think we are in an era of college football where coaching might be the single most important thing any program can have going for it. A guy that can look at what is happening on the field, can look at his play sheet, and can adjust and adapt on the fly as the game is happening. I never thought that that was Nick Saban. Now, there were many years where Nick Saban had wonderful coordinators who could do that for him. And what happened to those coordinators?
And analysts, is that what he called them?
Yes.
All those guys up in the booth?
Yes. Nick Saban's home for rehabilitated coaches. But Saban had coordinators that could do that tinkering for him. And then what happened? They all went on to be head coaches, and many of them, not all of them, but many of them have been successful head coaches to at least some level. here's where I'm at right now. Neither, and I'm going to say this respectfully because I don't think it has been a bad thing, though I think it is going to be a bad thing in the future in college football. I don't think you can do that anymore. And you can blame it on NIL, you can blame it on the portal, you can blame it on whatever you want. It doesn't matter why it is, it is. I think in the year 2025 and moving forward, football dudes are going to be the premier coaches around college football. Dudes who can, call them nerds, I call them football dudes. Brent Key ain't a nerd. Brent Key is an offensive lineman. And how many times have we said, Lonzo, who are the smartest dudes on any football field?
Obviously the offensive
lineman. It ain't the quarterbacks. It's the O-linemen. Head coaches, Clark Lee, not a nerd. Coaches at a nerd school, not a nerd. Brent Key, not a nerd. Coaches at a nerd school, not a nerd. But would you looky at those two nerd schools? All of a sudden, they're starting to stack some dubs. Why? Because they got football dudes who can coach. It is not an insult. It is not intended to be, nor is it, to say that Shane Beamer and Dabo Swinney both are aura coaches. They're not X's and O's guys. They're not tinker guys. They're not guys that are going to stand on the sideline of any given game and look and go, hey, their safety is doing X. Their linebackers are doing Y. So let's work this in. Like, that's not their thing. These are dudes that can be successful. But in order to be successful, they need those guys as their coordinators. The problem you're going to have, you know, I've said for years, like I was talking about Brent Key after they beat Clemson last week, and I said, the biggest issue you have right now, if you're Georgia Tech, if you are Vanderbilt, is that programs like Florida are looking at Brent Key and Clark Lee right now and going, y'all go ahead and start getting the Brinks truck ready because we're about to back one up to the front door of these guys' houses to get them down to Gainesville, right? And if you're a Georgia Tech or a Vandy, realistically, with a few rare exceptions, you're not going to have the money to keep those guys in the crib. The best thing you have going for you is if you get Brent Key and he goes, no, guys, I'm a Georgia Tech guy. All I've ever wanted to do was coach my school, and I'm going to stay here until they tell me to get gone, not when somebody else asks me to get gone. If Brent Key sticks around at Georgia Tech because he just loves the program, Georgia Tech one day can be elevated into the upper echelon of Georgia of college football because Brent Key is a guy who looks at the football field, sees what's happening, and makes adjustments. Dabo's not. Shane's not. Those guys need coordinators like Brent Key and like Clark Lee. But like Brent Key and Clark Lee, I wish their names weren't so much in rhyme with each other because that would make this easier. Like they are going to be recruited to go be a head coach at a bigger school. Coordinators who prove that they are able to adapt and call plays on the fly that match what is happening on the field and take advantage of that. Those are your new, we got to find those guys to be head coaches. So this is why I have been saying for a while, it is not just about Shane and Dabo making coordinator changes, as I think, with the exception of maybe Clayton White on the defensive side, although I got to tell you, after the embarrassing display that South Carolina's defense put on this weekend, maybe even that one. Not only do coordinator changes need to be made right now, but you better go find the right type of coordinator. Going to find a guy because he fits the vibe of the program, that's not it anymore. You are now in the era where I think, and I mean this, coaching in college football may be more important than coaching in the NFL now. Like, it might be more important to have guys who can see the field, understand what is happening, address it, react to it in real time, in game. Because if I'm going to watch an offense where Lenore Sellers is dropping back in the pocket to pass on first and goal from the one, and you have that man take a 7-step drop when he's already getting his ass kicked back there, and he ends up dropping back and taking a loss for, what was it, 17 yards, whatever, puts them second and goal from like the 22. I can't have that. And what happens the rest of that game? Let's just keep dropping Lenore's back into the pocket. Like we're the friggin', you know, 2009 Saints.
The officiating wasn't that great in that game either.
I agree, Lonzo, but we can't put this on officiating.
No, I know.
They got their ass kicked.
I think officiating this year in all of football has been bad.
I don't disagree. But that is one more thing happening on the field I need guys to adapt to. If you recognize that you're not getting holding calls, well, you better call plays that work around wherever the deficiency is. We're not doing that. It's just the same crap. This is something plaguing Clemson for the last two or three years. South Carolina fans are feeling it right now. All right, I want to come back to that theory in a little while and see if it holds weight with you guys. We'll get to that in a little while, but it is 7:10 in the morning. You've got less than 50 minutes till you got to get to the office, and you've got to start killing time until we get to Monday Night Football tonight, and then killing time until we get to football on Thursday night, and we reset for another spectacular weekend. How do you kill time? Real easy. Talking sports. That's why we do this. It is the water cooler cheat sheet, the top three sports stories you need to know before you get to the office and start killing time talking sports with your manager, your boss, your coworkers, whoever it is you spend time talking with them. This is what you'll be talking about. Allow us, if you will, ladies and gentlemen, to dive right in with item number one. Final scores don't often make the water cooler cheat sheet as their own item. This one does. Ladies and gentlemen, perhaps the demise of the Carolina Panthers was just a little bit over-exaggerated. 30-0. The Carolina Panthers blank the Atlanta Falcons yesterday, moved the Falcons to 1-2. They moved to 1-2 as well, and no longer are the cellar dwellers of the NFC South. That would be your, my, our New Orleans Saints. 30-0 in this game. A pair of rushing touchdowns. Rico Dowdle had one, 10 carries, 30 yards. B.Y., Bryce Young, had the other one, a four-yard scamper around the left-hand side. He took it in for one as well. 16 of 24, 121, took one sack in this game. This was a game that, looking at the statistics, you would say, hey, Bryce Young had an okay day. 16 of 24, 121.
They remembered that they have a running game, and they got a great 1-2 punch, and Dowdle looked excellent.
Dowdle looked good. Chuba, 17 carries, 73 yards, averaged over 4 carry. Like, yes, they got back to what they did at the end of last year. I completely agree. And I will also say that Bryce Young was efficient with the football. I would like to start out by saying Tet McMillan had 8 targets. He had 3 catches. Now, one of those catches was spectacular.
That jump. I mean, when they slow-mo'd it and he's like up above the dude's head.
Yeah.
His butt's like even with the other guy's helmet.
One of those catches, that jump catch was spectacular. He also had about 3 that were in the hands that you're like, dude, you're a first-round draft pick. Come on. And I'm not worried about him. He'll get better. Tommy Tremble, 2 for 2, 16 yards. Bryson Tremaine, 2 for 2, 16 yards. Jatavion Sanders looked really good, too. 2 targets, 2 catches, 11 yards. One of them, he had that hurdle in the middle that I was like, that dude's a dude. That's the guy I've been waiting for. I told you, I really like Jatavion Sanders. The injuries, if he can get out of the injury phase, he's going to be fine. Bryce Young did not have a remarkable day statistically. The honest number is probably closer to like 16, should be closer to like 20 of 24 for 170 maybe, maybe one touchdown. But this game was about efficiency. And again, Drew Brees was not, yes, Drew Brees had a bunch of 300-yard games, but Drew Brees was efficient with the football. That's what I need out of BY. Until the explosivity starts, I just need efficiency, wildly efficient with the football. Defense was playing, I hate this expression, defense was playing with the hair on fire yesterday. I mean, getting to Michael Penix Jr. and the Atlanta offense. 18 of 36, 172, and 2 picks out of Michael Penix Jr. They went to Kirk Cousins late in the game, 5 of 7, 29 yards.
You know what? You had mentioned, I think it was last week, you were asking who is Panthers' rival?
It's Atlanta, right?
That's how it looked yesterday.
That's how it looked.
That's what you do to a rival.
Yeah, you're not wrong. Held Bijan Robinson to 13 carries, 72 yards. Granted, that's 5.5 yards a carry, but like, never let Atlanta be in a spot where they could just lean on Bijan Robinson. What a showing from the Panthers. We're going to break this one down in depth a little bit later on in the show. Let's get to item number 2. It is going to become more and more regular in the cheat sheet that the Major League Baseball playoff race is going to be featured. Cal, the big dumper, Raleigh hit his MLB-leading 58th knock-a-homa last night, a two-run shot for the Mariners in the second inning of a 7-3 win over the Astros. J.P. Crawford put the Mariners up with a granny in the second. Raleigh then came in batting lefty as a switch, hit Jason Alexander for a home run to right.
I know I'm interrupting your flow here, but a granny?
Yeah.
What the?
Grand slam.
Grand slam.
There it is.
Okay. Yeah, no one says that but you, right?
No, a lot of baseball guys use granny.
Do they really?
Yeah, granny's a pretty popular term. Okay. Not, more people use granny than use dong.
Okay.
I can confirm that for sure. So, where does that leave us in the MLB playoff race as it stands right now? Well, over the weekend, the Toronto Blue Jays clinched a playoff spot. Not the division. They are only two games up on the Yankees, five games up on the Red Sox. The Rays and the Orioles have been eliminated from the AL East. So it's a three-horse race in the East. The division title still up for grabs. The Jays in the driver's seat. I think the only team that might catch them right now would be the Yankees. The Yankees 7-3 in the last 10, playing good ball. We'll have Cody Decker later on this week to talk a little bit about this. Hilariously, the NL Central, which we thought a number of weeks ago was the Tigers to lose. Yeah, they're losing it. They are 1-9 in the last 10. The Cleveland Guardians lost their first game in the last 11 yesterday. The Guardians are suddenly one game back from the Detroit Tigers in the Central. The Royals are still alive for the division, seven games back. That's unlikely, but they are also in a decent spot to make a run at a wild card. And in the AL East, with a three-game sweep of the Houston Astros, the Seattle Mariners now in the driver's seat for the NL West divisional title. They're three games up, but they do hold the tiebreaker now over the Houston Astros, which means with about eight games remaining, the Astros would have to be a full four games better than the Mariners. More than unlikely. The Astros not, however, out of the playoff for a wild card. The Rangers are eight games back. They would have to win every game. The Mariners and Astros lose every game to get there, and they will likely be, if they are a wild card, in the last spot. Over in the National League, two divisions have been clinched. All three divisions have been clinched. The Phillies clinched the NL East. The New York Mets are LOL Metsing. They are 12 games off the pace, so that is clinched. The Mets in a playoff spot right now, the last one, but they would need to do something special down the stretch. Miami is not eliminated from a playoff spot, but they are well off the pace. The Braves and Nationals are officially eliminated from the playoffs after the weekend. The Brewers have clinched the NL Central, seven games up on the Cubs, but the Cubs did clinch a playoff spot. They will be in the wild card round. The Reds and Cardinals still alive, but with work to do. And out in the West, the Dodgers have clinched a playoff berth, but not the division. They are three games up on the Padres. The Padres can still win that division, unlikely, but they are still alive. The Padres, Diamondbacks, and Giants are all still alive in the playoff hunt. Let's rapidly get to item number three. NASCAR playoffs round number two underway, and the win goes to Ryan Blaney. The 2003 Cup champion led 116 of 301 laps in the number 12 Mustang, including the final 39. Josh Berry, who got eliminated from the playoffs but was expected to have a good run, made a charge late, got to within a few car lengths left, but Blaney, just too much to overcome, was able to win the race yesterday, the Mobile 1 301 by 0.937 seconds. His third victory of the season, 16th in their career. Blaney trying to reach the championship for season finale for the third consecutive year, becomes the first driver to advance into one of the eight available spots in the third round of the playoffs. Barry had a good run, but Blaney was just unbelievable. We had this race on the third TV I had set up yesterday in the living room. It was for a race that had a lot of two second gaps. The last 10, 15 laps or so got pretty heated there. It was enjoyable. And very quickly, 89-73, the Indiana Fever lost game one of the last round. They have not lost a game since then. They knock off the Las Vegas Aces yesterday. Kelsey Mitchell poured in 34 in the win. The Minnesota Lynx win 82-69 over the Phoenix Mercury. Alyssa Thomas led all scorers with 18-8 for the losing team. Courtney Williams for Minnesota, 23 points, 8 boards, 7 assists. Pardon me, Courtney Williams led all scorers, not Alyssa Thomas. You get it. Courtney Williams, 23 points, 8 boards, 7 assists in the win. So now Indiana leads the Aces in the best of 5-1-0, and Minnesota leads Phoenix in the best of 5-1-0. We'll keep you up on the WNBA playoffs as well. But when we come back, I want to continue the thought that I had there to open this segment. We're in the era of football dudes. We are in the era where aura forming, as the kids say, no longer works for coaches. You can't just go, our program's great, so you should come here. You gotta show it on the football field. And I think that might be a problem for Clemson and South Carolina. Let's address that a little bit further when we come back on the Rob Brown Show and the Fan Upstate.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hi, I'm Nancy Cartwright. You may know me better as the voice of Bart Simpson.
On Simpsons Declassified, we're diving into the mysteries that keep the Simpsons forever young. Have you ever wondered how the Simpsons regularly predicts future events? Who better to ask than the show's creators, performers, and writers? The celebrity guests. Be sure to follow and listen to Simpsons Declassified wherever you get your podcasts.
It is the Rob Brown Show here on the Fan Upstate. Rob Brown, the great one, Lonzo. I'm working on a theory right now, and I would like to spend some time this week. Not tonight. The wife's back in town for one night. We're doing dinner and football tonight. She'll be out of town the next three nights, and I will be putting some effort into this. Because I'm working on a theory right now developing in college football. And that theory is, and it is going to be a tough one to prove, because this is going to be absolutely filled to the brim, and this goes against my nerd mind, where I say that the only things worth evaluating are tangible, are empirical, are things you can show with data and numbers. But let's be honest, the real world is full of subjectivity. This is going to be one of those spots. I am working on a theory that the era of coaches who are successful due to their, I'm going to use the word here, charisma, I think is coming to an end. Now, that is not to say that coaches who are successful will not have charisma, or that coaches that are unsuccessful will have charisma. I am saying that charisma as your main attraction is not going to work anymore. I think there are a lot of coaches, a lot of very good coaches through history, that were able to thrive on charisma. And I think you were able in years gone by to thrive on charisma because it was the number one reason that kids showed up on campus. You charmed them, or you convinced them that you were the right guy to coach them, or you convinced their parents that that you were the coach that could get them through their college experience with the best possible outcome, whatever. And then if you were successful, you could obviously walk in with your charisma and flash the rings and have kids go, oh, I like this guy and he's got dubs. And just like in real life, the rich get richer. It's kind of how the game works. But I don't think that's the case anymore. Because when you were doing that, you were kind of able to lean on, once I got him, gotcha, you're in now. And it took a lot of hoop jumping to get out, or you just had to quit football. Now, obviously, there are two primary drivers, and I do think these are the primary drivers. The difference between me and a lot of people is I don't think this is bad. But there are two primary drivers of this, NIL and the portal. If you are full of charisma, But another guy says, I can double up what you're going to make in NIL. A lot of people are going to be attracted to that. I am sure that a heavy number of us have either worked for less money because we had a boss we really liked, or maybe we had a boss we really liked, but we worked for a boss we didn't like as much because we made more money. I have worked at places that I hated working because I got paid pretty well to do it. And I have worked for places that I loved working for not a lot of money because I didn't wake up and hate my job and my life every day. I think a lot of us have been through that experience. That is now something that is a factor in college football. The other thing is obviously, and it's connected to it, although it is not always the primary reason that kids go into number two, the transfer portal. Yes, a lot of people do because they find out, well, I can make more money doing something else. We were talking about the kid at Texas Tech. Their quarterback went down. Their backup quarterback comes in. Their backup quarterback completes like 80% of his passes, throws a couple of touchdowns. And one of the announcers said in the game, and I'm going to go find the kid's name. I'm blanking on it right this second because I didn't pull it up. But in the game, kid goes out there, throws his like second touchdown of the game, and the color guy goes, that guy just earned himself a lot of money next year, either here or, you hope not, somewhere else. Yeah, that's part of the game now. Now, if you're a charisma guy, maybe you can convince that kid, why don't you come back next year? But look at what happened to South Carolina. Bo Prabula goes out there, dices up the defense for South Carolina. Why is he there? Because he was a Penn State loyalist. He went to Penn State. He wanted to be a Penn Stater. But when Drew Aller announced he was coming back next year, it became very evident. If you stay here, you are a career backup at Penn State. So he had a choice to make. Be a career backup at Penn State. And oh, by the way, probably not get much in NIL, if any. Or take your talent somewhere else where you can either compete for or just be the starter. And even if it's not a ton of money, even if it's not what Drew Aller's going to make at Penn State, be on the NIL wagon somewhere. So Bo Prabula goes, I don't want to be a career backup, even though I wanted to go to Penn State and I'm a loyalist. I'm actually a football loyalist that I want to play. So where's he ends up? At Mizzou. What did he do this weekend? Goes and gets a win over South Carolina, puts the Tigers on a really good trajectory upwards. If you're a charisma guy, that's not enough anymore. You have to be able to take those kids who want to play for you, and you've got to elevate that football team. How do you do that? Winning. Winning. At the end of the day, and I've talked about Nick Saban a lot. By the way, I got a clip from Nick Saban talking about Dabo Swinney. I'm going to get to here in a little while, but I've talked about Saban a lot, and I've told you guys in the past, Nick Saban was a jerk to anybody that couldn't help his football program, whether it's players or coaches or media members. I met Nick Saban once. He was ice cold until he found out that at the time, I was hosting the only drive time sports radio show that aired across the entire Florida Panhandle and most of Lower Alabama. And therefore, was where everybody, including high schoolers who were getting recruited, who wanted to listen to a college football show, I was the only guy. And then all of a sudden, Nick was a charmer, man. The Nick Saban you're seeing on game day right now that Pat McAfee is bringing out of him, that's actually Nick Saban when he likes you and he's comfortable and you can help him. That's who he is.
Quick aside, would you jump?
Would I jump?
You didn't see what Mac
did? Oh, yeah, no, I absolutely would. If I'm in that spot where I'm on TV and I can hype a crowd, yeah, I've done worse, dumber things than that to hype a crowd.
No way.
For way less money.
No way.
For way less money. That is who Nick Saban is.
You want to impress me, get Saban up there and have him jump.
Yeah, right. Nick could probably get Thanos if he hit that water. That's who Nick Saban is when he's comfortable, right? Like charisma. But at the same time, what did Nick do? Whenever he lost the coordinator, he found another football guy as a coordinator. And on top of that, he used his charisma to build a roster full of dudes that were very clearly the best team on paper. Luke with Greenville Gatos jumped into chat. He said, coaches are still going to have to motivate their teams to work together. I think Dabo was good at motivating chemistry when players were trapped. Now when things go bad, he can't keep it together. Listen, Clemson has one of the highest retention rates on football teams of anybody. The problem is twofold. Number one, he's not getting the athletes that he used to get, primarily because you used to be able to stack athletes, right? Alabama did this. This was always the running joke with Alabama is if Alabama loses their left tackle, their backup left tackle, probably a draft pick down the line, right? But that depth, that's not really available to most teams, anymore. I'm talking even the highest of the high. Saban was able to stack those guys because once they were in, they really couldn't go anywhere. And he was sending so many guys to the league that it's like, yeah, I might not play for 2 years, but in my third year, I'm playing for a draft position, right? You can't really do that anymore. And Clemson's not getting those dudes they used to get and able to stack them like they were able to stack them. So now, and this is kind of the thing, and I look at South Carolina. The last 2 years, South Carolina on paper has had, I'm not going to say as good of a team as they've ever had. Last year's was. This year's not as good as last year, but still not a bad football team. The problem is the X's and the O's suck, dude. And I'm talking for both of these teams. The X's and the O's suck right now. And if it doesn't translate on the field, charisma's not it anymore. It's just not. You might have a lot of guys that like really love the program. And they might be all in. And hell, they might be the hardest working group of guys. They don't look like it in those two schools right now, but maybe they are. But even if you're that, you've still got to go out there and call plays and execute in a way that fits what you have. What is the war cry for coordinators been for me for years? I don't want the best game plan out of my quarterback, or excuse me, out of my coordinator. I want the coordinator who has the best game plan for the guys that are on the field. I want a coordinator not who adapts the players to what he wants to run, but adapts what he wants to run to the players. This is what I've been screaming since week one. Lenore Sellers is not a pocket passing quarterback, and yet I'm watching him in Mizzou when you're in a hole in the fourth quarter calling 5 and 7 step drops with a pocket that's built to stay around Lenore's. You don't have the O-lineman or the quarterback for that, but that's what you're forcing? If you don't get the X's and O's right, it doesn't matter if you're the most... Shane Beamer might be the most charismatic guy I've ever been around, but the X's and O's are wrong, so it doesn't matter. Back after this on the Rob Brown Show in the Fan Upstate.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Hi, I'm Nancy Cartwright. You may know me better as the voice of Bart Simpson.
On Simpsons Declassified, we're diving into the mysteries that keep the Simpsons forever young. Have you ever wondered how the Simpsons regularly predicts future events? Who better to ask than the show's creators, performers, and writers? The celebrity guests. Be sure to follow and listen to Simpsons Declassified wherever you get your podcasts.
So the working theory is you cannot be just a charisma coach anymore. You have to do a number of things. I think you have to, and we were talking about this during the live stream. You should join us during the live stream because we have conversations off the air that sometimes make it on the air, sometimes don't, but there's like a show within a show happening on the live stream. Facebook.com/TheFanUpstate, The Fan Upstate on YouTube or Twitter, The Rob Brown Show. On Facebook, on YouTube, and on Twitch. We'd love to have you. Take us with you to work. Put us on your office TV, your laptop, your computer, your phone. Listen to us in the background as we talk some football. We'll help you kill those first few hours of the day, every day, because Lonzo and I are just kind, gracious, and benevolent beings like that. So
I don't know how you work vanilla in there, but you definitely did.
I mean, some days we are and some days we're not, you know? It's just, it depends on the mood we're in. It's early in the morning. Some people get their jollies early in the a.m., all right? So, there are a few things that you have to do, I think, as a head coach in college football in 2023 in order to be successful. The first one, obviously, is roster build. Now, a lot of schools are, most schools are, almost all schools are, now hiring general managers. Just like in the NFL, your general manager is kind of the guy that oversees roster construction with input from the coach. And I would even go so far as to, I'll say assume that head coaches at the college level probably have even more input into roster construction than head coaches do at the National Football League level. Now, that may change as the NIL world develops, as we get the College Sports Commission, yada, 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 up and running. That might change down the line. But I would assume right now that GMs at the college football level have a very similar role to GMs at the NFL level, but the coaches have a little bit more input. That is something that a coach is not doing alone as they would have in years gone by, but they are still a large part of it. The second thing that you have to do is roster retention. I've said before, you've got to recruit guys multiple times. You've got to recruit guys the first time to get them either out of their high schools or out of the portal to pick your school. But then every year, you have to re-recruit the guys that are already on your team. You have to give them a reason to stay on your team. And that's a lot. But this is why I think a lot of the older coaches, when the NIL and the portal kicked up, this is why they bailed. Nick Saban, this is going to sound wild. Nick Saban looks more like a genius for getting out when he did. Nick Saban didn't leave because he was tired of winning or tired of coaching. Nick Saban left because he went, I just want to coach. I don't want to have to deal with roster building like I'm an NFL guy. I don't want to have to deal with helping to negotiate NIL deals or, most importantly, perhaps, helping to promote guys for NIL deals. I don't want to deal with that. So he got out. I think there are some coaches, and yes, for right now, I put Dabo Swinney in that group. He doesn't want to deal with that, but it's not really an option anymore. Number three, you've got to assemble a good staff of coaches, because while a good coach is going to be able to see the football field and a good coach is going to be able to lean on the coordinators and say, look, here's what I'm seeing, so let's play to that. You also need to know that your offensive coordinator is as if not more locked in on what the defense is doing to call the offense to that. Your defensive coordinator is as or more locked into what their offense is doing so you can call to that. You are not in an era anymore where you can just have a coordinator who fits the vibe of the program and you're just going to out-talent teams. Part of the reason we had the discussion, what, a week ago, last week, around this time, where I asked Lonzo and you guys, the Armada, is there a team in college football right now that looks elite, that looks like they are head and shoulders above everybody else? Because in years gone by, they've always had like one or two or three teams that just, those are the best teams in college football. It is not a question, and we expect that we will see at least two of those teams in the college football national championship. And more often than not, those are the teams that got there. Do we have that this year? I would argue the answer is no. And I would argue that rare moving forward, will there be years where we do? One of the positives of the portal and NIL to me is that college football is now going to be balanced. When the NFL season starts, we usually come in here with like six or seven teams that we think are Super Bowl contenders. And through the course of the year, two or three of those teams fall out. Two or three teams we didn't think would be contenders make their way in. College football, and I think this is good, is going to look more like that. You'll always have the Chiefs, that team that's just, they're always in that mix, but they're not guaranteed a damn thing. So, in order to combat that, now not only do you have to recruit and retain well, but you better hire coordinators who understand, see, and adapt to the game, because the talent disparity for the biggest schools doesn't exist like it used to. And here's where I am with Clemson and South Carolina. This is the holdup portion for me. This is the spot that I think these teams have unfortunately failed coming into 2025. I don't think you have those guys. Now, with Garrett Riley, kind of a rare exemption here, because I don't think it's on Garrett Riley. I've seen the Clemson fans, Garrett Ryle, lead up about getting that guy out of his position. But I don't think it's on him. Like, I know we've made a lot out of the dirt raid offense that Riley was going to bring to Clemson. And I do think there's been some adaptations. But I've leaned on 100 times. I think Garrett Riley is hamstrung by Dabo Swinney. Because I think Dabo is so locked into, we're going to do it my way. We're going to do it our way. And I say my way because his way is the Clemson way. And as I told a buddy of mine over the weekend, the awkward thing about this spot is the expectations are high because of Dabo Swinney. But what do you do when the expectations that are high because of Dabo Swinney aren't being met because of Dabo Swinney? Last week, Giants-Cowboys, I kind of had a similar thought. Our buddy Chris Lewis of the Greenville Triumph, big Giants guy, and I texted him late in that game. Is it kind of weird that for 3.5 quarters, Russell Wilson was the reason that the Giants were about to beat the Dallas Cowboys on the road? And then for the last half of the last quarter, Russell Wilson was the reason you didn't beat the Dallas Cowboys on the road, right? Like, he's the reason you were in the hunt for that dub. And then when it came pressure time, he's the reason you didn't get that dub. That's a weird spot. That's kind of where I am with Dabo right now. Like, on one hand, he's the reason the expectations are national championship. But on the other hand, I think he's kind of the reason you're not meeting the expectations of national championship. Garrett Riley got brought in, and Dabo said he's not here to run the Garrett Riley offense. He's here to run the Clemson offense. Well, you're running the Clemson offense. It's not going great. And then there's the third thing. And this is something I think is true about both schools as well. I think both are failing on the coordinator and staff front. I think Dabo, as we've mentioned, as everybody's mentioned, this isn't a unique take-it-all, has filled the coaching staff out with nepotism hires, with guys that were players of his, or they were coaches of his, or they were teammates of his, or I think like the daughter of the university president's on the staff. I'm making that one up, but it's like some connection like that. It's filled with nepotism hires. And I think the results are bearing out. I look over at Shane, who brought in Shula, and I was like a little excited because I'm like, he did some good stuff with Cam, and well, it's not the same body type. It's not far off. Lenoris and Shula, maybe that's the combo. But Mike Shula's calling this offense as if Drew Brees is in the pocket, not Cam Newton. Failures at the coordinator's position, which if you're like Shane and Dabo, not excellent X's and O's coaches. And when I say excellent, I mean just elite, right? Anybody who's not elite is just another guy. When you're not great X's and O's guys, I need guys who are in charge of the X's and O's to be elite X's and O's guys. And you don't have that. But then there's the third thing, and it's player development. It's watching players get better. And I don't think that's the case. I'm going to play you very quickly before we go to the break a clip. This clip is from Richard Johnson, who was on CBS breaking down the Clemson-Syracuse game. And he had a take about Cade Klubnik that I think kind of sums up one of the biggest problems that I think you're seeing at both Clemson and South Carolina right now. Here's the take. Cade Klubnik doesn't look any better. I didn't change my sound thing over. Hang on 2 seconds. I'm going to get it fixed, or I'll just have to come back to the clip later. It looks like I'm going to have to come back to the clip later because my computer is poo-pooing the bed. Long story short, what he said here was, I don't see Cade Klubnik getting better. In fact, if anything, I see a regression. And again, not a hot take, not a bold take, not anything that's not being said by a lot of people. But sometimes the reason that there's not a hot take or I don't think you need a hot take or a bold take about Clemson right now. I don't think you need a hot take or a bold take because I think it's pretty obvious what is happening. Your X's and O's aren't good. You do not stack the talent like you were able to during the dynastic years. And it does not appear that your players are getting better. Does anybody see? And I've asked this question before. And I think I've got it working. Here's the clip because I've been saying this, but I like it when it comes from somebody else as well.
Cade Klubnik doesn't look any better to me. He does not look like he is progressing as a passer or progressing as a quarterback. There were some people who were saying, oh, he could be a first-round draft pick coming into this season, but he hasn't gotten any better. Adam Randall is giving them a lot of production on the ground. He's a converted wide receiver. He's not a running back. Clemson's offensive line, to be honest with you, has never really been like a road grading unit that puts a bunch of pros in the league. They just haven't really been that, even when they were really good. But at the end of the day, they were able to catch lightning in a bottle with Deshaun Watson and Trevor Lawrence back to back. And it sounds crazy to say that.
All right, so you get the point. The point here is when you're not really elite across the offensive line, and you're not, when you're not really elite at the running back, and you're not, I still need to see progression, especially out of a quarterback who was expected to be a Heisman Trophy finalist and competing for the number one overall draft pick. Instead, at this point, where's Cade Klubnik getting drafted if the draft is this weekend? Is Cade Klubnik getting drafted if the draft is this weekend? Like sixth, seventh round? Like Mac Jones, right? Like he looks like Mac Jones right now. So, with that being said, it is about...
Didn't Mac Jones win yesterday?
Mac Jones, yes. They did. They finished it off with a game-winning walk-off. The NFL was hammered drunk yesterday in the afternoon slot, by the way. I mean, hammered drunk. We're going to get to that. Worst bet loss of my life. Eagles-Rams. Of my life. We're going to get to that, too. Player acquisition. Player retention. Having the right coordinators, X's and O's guys, if you're not an X and O guy, or charisma guys, if you are an X and O guy, and development. Which of those four areas that I think coaches have to be in charge of, which of those four areas? I'd say South Carolina's excelling relative to where they usually are at player acquisition and retention, but the X's and O's suck, and the development sucks. With Clemson, I think the acquisition is lacking. The retention's great, but the acquisition's lacking. The X's and O's are bad, and we are seeing negative development. That's why you are 1-3 for the first time since, what was it, 2014? That's why. South Carolina, that's why you're losing a game on the road at Mizzou that was very winnable. We'll talk more about this. I want to get some NFL in the next hour as well, with the Panthers looking like a juggernaut this weekend. All that and more coming up after Lonzo. Speaking of juggernauts, just powers through this sports flash.
And speaking of the Carolina Panthers, they got their first win of the year yesterday. A 30-0 shutout of the Atlanta Falcons. Bryce Young finished the day 16-24 for 121 yards with a rushing touchdown, while the Panthers ran for 110 yards and two scores. Carolina's defense picked off Atlanta quarterback Michael Penix Jr. twice and recovered a fumble as well. The Kansas City Chiefs picked up their first win of the season with a 22-9 victory over the New York Giants last night. Patrick Mahomes threw for 224 yards and a touchdown, and Kareem Hunt added a rushing touchdown. The Kansas City defense picked off Russell Wilson twice and held him to just 160 yards passing. College football top 25 poll dropped yesterday, with Ohio State holding the number one spot. Miami jumped to two. Penn State at 3, LSU 4, Georgia rounding out the top 5, Oregon, Oklahoma, FSU, Texas A&M, and Texas in the top 10.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hi, I'm Nancy Cartwright. You may know me better as the voice of Bart Simpson.
On Simpsons Declassified, we're diving into the mysteries that keep the Simpsons forever young. Have you ever wondered how the Simpsons regularly predicts future events? Who better to ask than the show's creators, performers, and writers? The celebrity guests. Be sure to follow and listen to Simpsons Declassified wherever you get your podcasts.